Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Jake, we had the world title match set up tonight on Dynamite for World Ends, but we also got an acceptance speech, Oscar Academy Award style, from Toni Storm. But most of the show built around the launch of the inaugural Continental Classic tournament to crown a new Triple Crown title holder. And we got three matches tonight with Swerve Strickland earning 3 points against Jay Lethal with a win in 14 minutes. No surprise at that finish. And then on the second match, Jay White beating Roosh in about 14 minutes with a low blow. No surprise that White would get the win there, but a little less sure than that first match. And then the main event, John Moxley defeating Mark Briscoe in 12 minutes. Again, no surprise at the outcome. How would you evaluate the first night of the Continental Classic, Jake?
Well, I guess it delivered as promised, in the sense that there were clean finishes and there were highly competitive matches. If I was going to level any criticism, it would be I thought night one could have used an upset just to kind of set the tone that unexpected things could be happening in the tournament. But I mean, you know, what we saw wasn't bad in any way. I think the issue with the finish in the Roosh versus Jay White match was a bit of a bummer that they, that they had to give Roosh, you know, kind of an out for taking the loss because of the ref bump or teased ref bump. But other than that, I thought, you know, everything else delivered as they said it would.
Well, you got to find a way to get Roosh to agree to go to the ring. So I'm only half turning. Yeah. I agree with your take on things. I mean, this is a good but not stellar group, this tournament. There's some, you know, top names and some mid-level names and a couple lower level names, and it's, you know, it's a mixed bag. I mean, it's what I expected and it's what I was prepped for, but I kind of stuck to my guns in terms of what I wrote in last week's Pro Wrestling Torch Newsletter cover story, which is this was a chance for Tony Khan and AEW to kind of break from their comfort zone and give away some matches that might be inconvenient. People who are in line for world title shots, people who they want to save matches for later, they don't want them doing jobs, and just load it up and make this something that's going to jar fans who are sort of apathetic towards AEW or disgruntled, and jar them into watching and with a message that this isn't business as usual. This isn't saving matches for later. We're putting 12 of the top, say, 16 single stars who are healthy and available out there. And I know some people aren't, they've got other things going on. There was potential for this to just kind of cause people to go, wait, all those people are in this? And they didn't take it to that level. Now, that's my standard. That was my hope. But I think, you know, there's enough names in it for this to still be a very good tournament in terms of, you know, feeling like there's some big names where you're not exactly sure who's going to win. And ultimately, some drama in terms of the points, and hopefully they're, you know, plotting out everything so that, you know, things really do work out well in the end. But for a first night, it was what you would expect, you know, no outside they're not going to allow outside interference, and that's good. They took that step by announcing, you know, no one can be at ringside, and if there's interference, not only will you get disqualified, but you'll get points deducted, which was a pretty big step. So that, to me, that sent a message. Yeah, that's our signal to the fans that we're going to do clean finishes. And yeah, the second match, low blow. That's not a clean finish. It's a heel being a heel, but it took a ref bump, ref being turned around after being bumped into for that to happen. And so it does kind of let people know, we're going to have different ways that there's going to be non-clean finishes, just not interference, but we'll find other ways to do it. And I don't know if that's a message you want to send the first week either. And I'm with you on, you know, having an upset. If they could have afforded that, and I hope there's some upsets in the tournament, because you can sure lay out a lot of predictable matches if they don't do upsets. This would have been a night to kind of send a message, hey, you can't assume what's going to happen. I thought they might do that with Mark Briscoe and John Moxley, and they could, you know, Moxley, you know, being fresh off a fight over the weekend, and then, you know, he goes on Rampage afterwards, but that would keep people on their toes. I don't know if they want to give that much of a win to Briscoe, but, you know, it's all about master planning everything. You can rearrange the matches, you know, the first matches that you do to put someone in the ring who would be an upset that you want to give a win over someone like Moxley. But they didn't do that, so, you know, I mean, it's a critique. It's a lost opportunity. It doesn't, you know, by any means destroy the tournament, but I think it does send a signal. It's going to be kind of business as usual.
Yeah, I think that's regrettable in a way because, you know, the way to solve the problem of an upset is more upsets. You know, like give people a reason to tune in on a weekly basis because, you know, hey, but, you know, we do have some top-level stars in this tournament and, you know, as you mentioned, some mid-level stars and whatnot. But you can expect that, hey, you know, there's a decent chance that a top-level star is going to get upset. And that's a reason for somebody who may, you know, typically watch the show on DVR or maybe wait to find the results of a show to tune in live. And so I think setting those expectations early would have been fun. I do think we'll probably still see a couple of upsets here and there, but it doesn't seem like it's a G1 level game of matchups where, you know, people with obvious strengths and weaknesses, you know, end up against each other when they ordinarily wouldn't find themselves in a ring together. And that leads to sort of interesting outcomes. I hope we get more of that as time goes on, but we didn't see any of it tonight. And in fact, the match that seemed the most unpredictable going into the show was the one that had kind of the screwy finish with the low blow. So, you know, hopefully we get some different style of matchups going forward and some unexpected outcomes. Cause that's what I think makes these round robin style tournaments, you know, fun to pay attention to and watch.
One of the top criticisms that I'm hearing about AEW, and it's not something that affects me all that much when I watch wrestling, which is predictability of outcome. It's not that it's not a factor and not that I don't like unpredictability, but like on a regular weekly TV show, if a whole show is just full of matches where you kind of have a pretty good idea who's going to win, for whatever reason, that doesn't affect my enjoyment of the show, or at least I'm not aware of it. But we've had callers and emailers bring up that does bother them. This tournament was a way to break from that being something that AEW is known for or that bothers some people. And, you know, the first night, it was just more predictability. You know, on paper, the expected winners won. And, I mean, granted, the expected winner should win most of the time. But what you want is more matches where you don't know the outcome or – again, on occasion where there's an upset. And yeah, it just didn't happen tonight. And if you're AEW and you're trying to, you know, send a message, hey, we hear you, we're aware of some of the things that people are critical of that we're doing, launch a tournament and you say we're going to ban people from ringside, you kind of want to go all the way with it and not have it just come across like, well, the banning from people from ringside is kind of lip service. It's going halfway, but we're really not changing. We're just going to find a different way to have predictable outcomes and cheating leading to the finishes. So that's a critique. I mean, obviously, there's going to be good wrestling. And for the people who love good wrestling matches, that's not a weakness in AEW, and this tournament will give them more of that. The critique is how do you expand beyond those fans? And if you're Tony Khan, this tournament seems like, you know, an effort to do that, not just fill time during the holidays. But I thought they did a good job, like, explaining the brackets and the rules and the point system, Jake.
Yeah, I think they did explain the point system well. They went over the round robin nature of the tournament multiple times. You know, I think they had, you know, Shivani be, you know, playing kind of the fool, so to speak, where he was pointing out things that, you know, may be obvious to some people, but was new to him, such as, you know, you can lose a match and still, you know, end up winning the tournament if you end up running the table for the rest of the matches and things like that. So it was good to make sure that, you know, people who are unfamiliar with this format really understood what was at stake and what was going on.
I'm never going to criticize for AEW for holding the hands of viewers on things that might seem obvious, because I'd rather have them fault on that direction than the other direction. But yeah, when Tony's like, so you can, like, Swerve could lose this match and then go on to win the tournament. And I was like, okay, maybe you're pushing the limit of people's lack of knowledge of how round-robin tournaments work. But again, I was fine with it, but it walked right up to that line of seeming like you're maybe holding our hand a little too much through how this format works. But like I said, they walked up the line, they didn't cross it. And, you know, again, I'm all in favor of explaining more, not less, you know, than their instincts have been. All right. Well, Jake, let's pause. Let's introduce the show, and then we'll get on to other aspects of the show, talk more about the tournament and the matches, and also just broadly talk about the tournament. I've written two editorials today on pwtorch.com about the tournament in addition to the initial news story on the full list of competitors in each of the blocks being released. And we can, Jake, you and I can discuss some of our picks for who we think are actual candidates to win, if there's any dark horses that people should keep an eye on, and what we learned tonight. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, November 22nd, 2023. And I'm the host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter and the website pwtorch.com. And the host of many podcasts throughout the week, including Wade Keller post shows and podcasts. We had our flagship episode yesterday on the Blue Logo Show, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast with Rich Van. This is our Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post show. And we cover Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Rampage live Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday nights within minutes after the show's ending. You can find us at WadeKellerPostShow.com or find a direct link to that night's show in my TV reports at PWTorch.com. At the top and bottom of those reports, there's the phone number, the email, and a link for the live stream. You're invited to listen live, but of course, as the vast majority of you do, you download the show afterwards when the full show becomes available on our podcast feed, and we thank you for doing that. The other voice you hear on the show is Jake Barnett from ProWrestling.net and the .net weekly flagship members-only show. Jake, welcome back to the co-share.
Thanks, Wayne. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Good to have you. Do you have a nice weekend planned for the holiday weekend, for Thanksgiving?
Yeah, I'm laying pretty low this year. We're not traveling, and I don't have family coming into town, so it's just me and my wife and my daughter. And we're doing a Brazilian steakhouse for a meal tomorrow rather than cooking at home, and then we're trying to lay low for the rest of the weekend, watch some football, and hang out. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to having a few days of downtime.
Those are nice. Those are nice. I've got a mix of work and downtime too, but looking forward to some sports too. It's a good weekend for that. All right. Well, let's give out the phone number and invite callers. Our number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That flags you on our switchboard so that we know that you want to be on the show. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the Continental Classic. I keep wanting to say Collision Classic. It'll come to me. I'll get used to it. On the Continental Classic, we want to get your thoughts not only on what happened tonight, but also your thoughts on the tournament as a whole, the competitors, the format, and, of course, what you think of the first night and then what's coming up Saturday on Collision. You can also email us at WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. That's Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. All right, let's go to James in Clemson, who's up first. James, you're the first caller tonight. Happy Thanksgiving. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Hey, happy Thanksgiving to you guys too. I just wanted to get in on the conversation about the Continental Classic. I'm somebody who has never really watched New Japan. Definitely never watched a G1 tournament or any tournament like what I saw tonight. And so I got that perspective on it because the whole Continental Classic thing was new to me. And I kind of, on the subject of how you guys were talking about, you wish there were more surprises. To me, I kind of liked the fact that there weren't surprises. I think you can do that on Friday or Saturday. But tonight, what I liked was that it just set the tone. This show is not going to be your typical AEW show. It just set that sports-like feel to me. Even though it was just very by the numbers, very basic, it just kind of told me that, they're not going to be screwing around and messing around. There's not going to be – and I love that there's not anybody at ringside allowed. But, Tony said this is what you think wrestling should be, then put your money where your mouth is. And so my first thought tonight was that I really, really liked the tone of this show because it had exactly what everybody was saying AEW should be from the beginning. It was that sports-like mm-hmm. feel. And to me, like, this show just felt different than any other show I've watched in the past, you know, AEW-wise at least. It just felt like something that I think everybody would like, because I think that sports-like presentation is something that AEW can do exactly what they want to do, which is grab the second million, like you say. You know, it's just a style of wrestling that everybody can latch onto, and you don't need these screwy finishes, bloody matches, none of that. You can just have straight-up matches where one person wins and one person loses, and it matters in the end. And so that's what I thought tonight was, and I just really, really enjoyed this. So that's the main. I'll throw to you guys for comments, but I really liked the show.
Yeah, I'm glad you liked the show. I mean, you pointed out the things that one would like about the show. It did have more of a sports-like feel to it with a point system, and the stakes felt high, and they did the thing where we're going to stay long as it takes, even if it's a 20-minute draw, past the top of the hour. You said they gave straightforward finishes and weren't, messing around. We did get a low blow in one match, and then we did get blood in one match. So, I'm not against the blood in the match. I mean, I would save blood for fewer special occasions than AEW does, but nevertheless, we did have that. Like Jake and I said, I think I would have been happier with a non-low blow on the first night, and really a non-low blow throughout. And they could solve that easily by going, not only is everyone banned from ringside, and if anyone interferes, not only do you get DQ'd, but you get points deducted, but we're going to have a second referee at ringside who has the full authority to override any pinfall or DQ if the referee sees something that was an infraction, and that will also be a DQ and a point deduction. They could have gone further if they wanted to really let people know we are taking storyline steps that in a meta sense should be sending you the signal we're doing all clean finishes. And we didn't get that tonight. But the vibe of the point system, and I like the chart. I think the visuals is really good. They could have easily not done that and just thrown numbers at us. But that I think it made it make more sense how this is going to work and how it's going to progress. So yes, and then the whole put your money where your mouth is comment by Tony Khan, I think kind of misses the point. There's people who really like good wrestling who aren't watching because they're frustrated with other aspects of the product or the fact that the good wrestling doesn't have coherent or consistent or compelling storylines built around it. People who like good wrestling aren't watching because they think there's too many titles and it's watered things down, or on and on. There's people who like good wrestling but aren't watching, not because there's not enough good wrestling, but because of other factors. And I think Tony oversimplified it in going, well, if you want more of this sports-like stuff, you better watch. And yeah, if that's what he meant and it came across that way to me, I don't think that's a very endearing approach that's going to win people over. And I think it also just kind of misses the point, which is people are stipulating to the good wrestling. They just want other things cleaned up. Jake, your thoughts on what James said, and he brought up that comment from Tony. What was your take on that too?
Yeah, I guess, I think Tony is just very, confident in this particular style of booking. He loves tournaments. He clearly is in love with, Japanese wrestling, things like the G1, things like the Triple Crown tournament in All Japan years and years ago. And I think it's a way for him to sort of import some of the things that he loves about international wrestling into his own company. I guess the overall vibe of the tournament and the show, I think, yeah, it was improved by the sports-like feel. I think, when you start doing round robin tournaments in your pro wrestling show, you have to, obviously you're going to start looking at other pro wrestling round robin tournaments, but you can also look at other successful tournaments in professional sports, whether it's, some of the international, soccer or, football in most of the world, tournaments that are run in this style, or even, some elements of NCAA March Madness and why that's so successful and does really big numbers in the U.S. It's about different types of story crafting. And you see that with the way that major sports networks cover things like the FIFA tournament and the NCAA tournament, both men's and women's in multiple different sports, whether it's basketball or hockey or whatever the case may be. They look at characters and storylines and they start to make that a part of the broadcast. And I think that's that's how they can make this tournament special. They have to make that Triple Crown Championship, if that's what they're calling it, feel like a really esteemed prize. They have to define what it means to the competitors that are involved in this tournament, what they will, you know, ultimately do with it once somebody holds it. And then at the end of the day, they have to start telling stories with the characters that are involved in it. And if anything, I think that's where AEW typically struggles, is that they, you know, they can create titles and they can, you know, that gives you sort of this automatic stakes on of something being on the line. But unless you start adding the layers of storytelling to it, the audience doesn't really get that full buy-in effect. And I think that's what they have to really work on to make this tournament continue to feel special. But I think the presentation aspects of it, the point system, you know, the all the graphics, the brackets, you know, having stars that feel like they're on their way up, particularly you know, Swerve and people you just saw in the world title picture, like Jay White, and, you know, people like Bryan Danielson and Jon Moxley, popular people like Eddie Kingston, who always feels like he's on the cusp of doing something big. Having them all involved in this tournament is great, but you just have to do, like, you still have all your work ahead of you, you know, even though you have all those successful elements in place.
Yeah.
The tournament has to have all of the storytelling elements that make great sporting tournaments and events feel special. Underdogs, favorites, you know, people, unexpected events, you know, injuries, all those things that can derail somebody's journey or you know make a path for somebody much harder or much easier than someone else. All those things have to be a part of this, and I haven't seen that come to fruition yet in the groundwork that they've laid for the tournament. And that's what I'm hoping they start getting to, you know, once we get through this first week, is show me that you have a plan for this. It just, it felt like it came together so quickly, and this Triple Crown title came together so quickly that it almost feels like an exhibition tournament. And that's not what I think would make this really fun and successful for the majority of AEW fans.
Yeah, this has to be more than, you know, working backwards from the winner and figuring out how to minimize how many wrestlers, quote, get hurt by having to do clean jobs, and stacking up points with predictable outcomes, and then hedging with either low blow type finishes or draws for matches where wrestlers are more competitive. They need to break from that. They need, you know, we shouldn't be able to, if we found out who we're going to be in the final and booked backwards from there, we shouldn't be able to figure out every single finish predictably. But I fear that we would be able to do that. You know, if like, you know, once you know who are going to be battling in the final at World's End, you, and especially if you knew their point total, you'd be like, okay, well, that person's going to win that to get 3 points, and that's going to be a draw to get 1 point. You don't want it to be that predictable. I'm not saying just – I don't think any of us are saying be random about it. You want an upset to be strategic and meaningful and really have impact and not just be like no-selling a, you know, 6 super kicks so you can get in another high spot. You don't want the tournament to be like that where there's upsets that are just, you know, the impact of them goes poof. It's just for the shock value of the moment. But that's stuff that takes time and effort and just big time and effort. I mean, you've got to play that all out in booking meetings and really come up with layering to make this more compelling. Jake, what do you think about the Triple Crown aspect of this? I'm still not clear if this is just going to become a title that's defended or a title for a trophy case that then gets defended, you know, 10 and a half months later when there's another tournament, get defended on ROH pay-per-views because now there's not an ROH world champion. And then it just also gets defended on New Japan Strong shows and on occasion in AEW. What are you thinking? What do you know? What do you think is going to happen? And what do you think about there being yet another title, even though technically you're trading two and gaining one?
I mean, I assume this thing is going to be defended in Ring of Honor. It's going to be defended on AEW television, and it'll likely be defended in Japan. But it, I mean, clearly it's a reference to the Triple Crown Championship of All Japan Pro Wrestling. And I think there's, you know, a lot of, if you've been listening to Tony Khan over the years and people like Eddie Kingston, who's absolutely in love with that particular era in that promotion, you know, it's something that he loves, is looking back at wrestling history and being obsessed with that. What does it mean for them now? I don't think they've really come out and defined it. I certainly, you know, if they're going to do anything with this title, I think it should be, well, you know, is this on the level of a world championship? You certainly have world championships that, you know, and world championship caliber talent that are interested in this tournament and in this title. So would this allow them to do like a brand split? Would this, you know, allow them to do some more interesting things with the roster? Because I think if you're looking at AEW holistically right now, they have, you know, well, I mean, an absurd amount of people under contract, and a lot of them that they don't get an opportunity to use on a week-to-week basis. And that's doubly true if you have talent working, you know, double shifts on both Wednesdays and then Fridays and Saturdays. And so if that could be an avenue for them to make a harder roster split and actually get more of these people on television, that may be a boost to the brand. But I don't know what the destination or the destiny of a show like a Rampage or a Collision is at this point, given the numbers and their upcoming television negotiations and all that. So I'm rampantly speculating right now. But I think if they can't use it to, you know, do a split or you know, create a hard division in the roster, then it's probably just going to be an ornament that's exclusively for this tournament that's defended once a year.
Yeah, I'm fine, even though it wouldn't be in the follow the pattern of All Japan's Triple Crown Championship from the 90s, it would be, I would prefer it to be a trophy case title, not another belt people are carrying around. I mean, there's people that are like, well, this tournament means more because there's a title belt that's being given to the winner. And I'm like, well, you can make that argument, yes, but at the same time, you're devaluing all the other titles at the same time by having someone else walking around with this prestigious path that they took to become champion. It's the merging of you know, two other titles, and it's this grueling tournament with a point system. And does that make what MJF is holding feel weak, feel less? And Orange Cassidy, and who's the TNT champion right now? Oh, Christian. And does that make that title feel less? I mean, it's just remembering who the champion is sometimes is a challenge. So there's so many of them floating out there. I haven't seen that. I haven't seen Tony Khan or an instance where they've made clear what's going to happen with that title. But I'm concerned we're going to have somebody else walking around with, you know, a title that feels, you know, relatively equally prestigious as the world title and a couple others too. James, I'll throw back to you for any follow-up. We covered a lot there.
Yeah. I guess what I'm trying to get across, like from the perspective of me as somebody who has not seen a tournament like this before, like I felt like tonight's show was designed for somebody who's never seen a U.S.-based round-robin tournament like this. Because like the story of the show wasn't, oh my God, who was John Moxley wrestling and from Jonah Blake.
Mark Briscoe.
So yeah, the story was that, oh my God, Mark Briscoe beat John Moxley. The story was we have this new tournament and this is how it works. And we're going to explain it really well for people who don't know how it works. I think that's what I liked most about that presentation. Now I do think the weakness of this tournament is 100% that title. Like you say, is not very defined. I think Tony said in the media scrum something along the lines of whoever wins this title will defend it across the world as the Triple Crown champion. But also, I don't know if anybody's really bringing this up, but AEW snuck in that they created a new title because the title is the ROH champion, the New Japan champion, and their new continental championship that they created. I guess AEW just snuck that in. That's pretty much everything I have on the Continental Classic. I got another subject, unless you guys want to add to that.
Jake, you want anything to that?
No, I guess other than, you know, I'm wondering if they don't actually have the belt ready yet. That's why they've kept it covered in felt the entire time. Maybe they got like a decoy in there for now.
and maybe they just want to unveil it to the winner, and we won't see it until the pay-per-view too. But yeah, it's very possible how this came together. They don't have a belt ready yet. All right. Yeah. Go ahead, James.
Yeah. The MJF segment is what I wanted to kind of shift to. I do feel like MJF's like heat is rapidly declining. Like this crowd did not seem very into the things he was doing. It's to me. Like, I may have had the sound a little low or something, so I'd be curious if you have an on-site correspondent. But, like, it just feels like MJF is kind of starting to cool off, and you can tell he's trying really, really hard. But honestly, I felt like Joe got a better pop than MJF did. And but on that subject, I am very, very much looking forward to this MJF Samoa Joe match. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, just because of how good the first match was. And so, yeah, that's all I really had on tonight. And it was a good show, and I guess my challenge is back to Tony Khan. Put your money where your mouth is, and let's have more shows like this. But you guys have a good night, and it's been, I hope you have a really good Thanksgiving. I'm hoping to gain a few pounds if I do it right. So.
Thanks, James. Yep. Enjoy yourself. And thanks for the kind words. Interesting comment about MJF and the crowd reaction. I was thinking the same thing. It didn't feel like we were anywhere near the level of reaction that MJF was getting before, I guess, the Adam Cole stuff started. There was some little bit of pandering with, you know, deep dish pizza and there are a couple other things, mentioning Chicago by name, and he was trying to kind of localize things. But then, you know, he knew he was asking for it when he said that Long Island is the most special place in the country or on earth. And he kind of took it out on Chicago fans a little bit, going, hey, I enjoy your deep dish pizza, lay off. But he was getting pelted with people who weren't pleased with him putting over Long Island over Chicago. And it's awkward watching MJF now, because I don't think he's found the lane or the rhythm of what his character is going to be fully yet. Or if he has, he strays from it often enough that you're never sure when you're seeing, who he really is intending for us to be. I mean, I want to be fair to him, because I he's the guy who to pander to the crowd, but also be insulting and so blunt feels unsustainably contradictory in terms of how crowds are going to respond. Because in one breath, you're being kind of John Cena, Hulk Hogan-esque and playing up to them. And, you know, with a little wink and a nod going, hey, I'm insulting you, but I really like you and you like me. And then other times it just feels like legit, you know, trying to be edgy. And sometimes in a way that's just sort of, you know, crude, you know, and where he's getting bleeped left and right because he's, you know, showing he can push the limits. So I'm still kind of waiting for him to kind of find where he wants to land here. Jake, how did you feel about the follow-up to MJF retaining the title and how that story happened, played out at Full Gear, and then the follow-up with Samoa Joe and Adam Cole by MJF's side tonight?
I didn't think it was a particularly good segment. I think Joe was probably the best part of it, in the sense that he is the character who seems to have the most clarity about who he is. I think MJF, as you mentioned, is in a pretty weird spot. He's doing the, you know, kind of half John Cena pandering bit and then half insult comic bit. And I think it makes everything he's doing come across as insincere in a way that maybe he doesn't intend, where you don't really take anything he says seriously because he's vacillating so widely between one character trait and the other. And typically, you know, he used to look forward to going back to Long Island because he got universally cheered there, from an audience that, you know, it's his hometown, and, it became sort of his Montreal or Bizarro world of sorts. And I don't even know what he can expect going back there now. You know, is it going to be more of a mixed reaction than he was getting previously? Is it going to be still the same type of universal support? I guess that, you know, that remains to be seen. But I think he's been walking a path now for several months where he's trying to be everything to everyone. And when you do that, I think you end up sacrificing the best parts of yourself in one direction or the other. And so I hope he finds that. Adam Cole's obviously limited by, you know, his injury and what they're trying to pay off a long-term story with him eventually once he's healthy, but it's clear he's just in a holding pattern right now. But, you know, Joe has that intensity and he has that confidence and he never wavers from his convictions. And I think
there's an authenticity to everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think MJF is missing, that he had before. And throughout his attempts to, I don't even want to say modernize, because that's probably not the right term, but sort of modify his character to serve a wider audience, to appeal, to improve himself, to get better as a person. I think he's lost that authenticity because he wavers back and forth, between the two aspects of his personality. And so I think he's just got to pick a lane and stick with it if he wants to be successful long-term. I just don't know, when they're going to be able to pay off some of these dangling threads of this story. And if they carry on for too long, then you run the risk of him completely cooling off, which would be a real shame, because it wasn't that long ago that, he was the hottest thing in professional wrestling.
What do you make of MJF saying, no, blow me, it got bleeped to Joe regarding giving him the title shot that he had promised. And then Cole being the one to kind of talk sense into MJF. What do you make of that? Is it a red herring? And Cole, ultimately is a heel, and he's trying to, lay the groundwork of embarrassing MJF and calling him out as a way to kind of justify what he eventually does to him, that he hasn't been a man of his word and Cole had to steer him. Or is Cole being sincere and genuine now, but maybe later he turns heel? Or he is genuine now and they stay friends? Or MJF turns on Cole eventually because Cole's nagging him about trying to be more of an upright guy than MJF wants to be. That's, I think, four distinct options, and there's probably a fifth and a sixth path too. Based on what we saw tonight and also at Full Gear on Saturday, do you have any more of an idea of where we're heading here?
I think the ultimate goal for Adam Cole is he's going to turn heel. I think they're – obviously, the injury certainly extended the timeline for how long it's going to take for that to happen. You look at his behavior at the pay-per-view on Saturday, and I think one of the few things that actually worked about that main event for me was, Cole sort of falling into several "is he or is he not" sort of traps with the diamond ring and with the throwing in the towel and all the him encouraging Max to continue to throw Jay White back into the ring and win the honorable way, despite that not necessarily being the best thing for Max in the moment. And so they're playing off all of these, different sort of tropes in wrestling where, if you were looking at it with a skeptical eye, you might say, oh, this is him attempting to undermine his supposed best friend. And I think he continues to do that on tonight's show where, Max blows off Joe, and it's not like they had anything other than a verbal agreement. I don't think Joe had a contract for a match or anything. And so, Max very well could have gotten away with blowing him off. But instead, it's Adam Cole who's consistently sort of walking him up to that ledge and putting him into a position where he's in peril. And so ultimately, I think the idea is Adam is going to stab him in the back and maybe be the guy to take that title if everything goes well and he's able to recover from his injury in a reasonable timeline. But I really don't know what that's looking like at this point.
Do you think we will end up, when that moment happens, if it happens, looking back and going, Cole was faking it. He was never MJF's best friend. He plotted this all along. Or is he torn and conflicted, and there's things MJF is going to do between now and that moment that sways Cole from seeing him as a good friend to misjudging him as not being a good friend if Cole's going to be the heel? Because there's different ways this can go. It can be a plot all along, or it can be a decision along the way, or a late decision.
Yeah, I think the best time for them to pull the trigger on it being a master plan from the word go would have been Wembley, and then they just didn't. And so now I think it has to be more of an evolving sensibility where Max actually did win over Adam Cole at some point, and then he eventually decides, well, this guy is still an insincere scumbag, and I'm going to stab him in the back before he can stab me in the back. But again, we don't really know what that time scale is. Is Adam Cole going to be ready in the next 3 to 6 months? Is this something where, they're not going to be able to pay off until they get to Revolution in the spring, because that really changes how they have to approach the story and how often they have to check in with it and all those things. And so that would be what I would do if I thought that they could have, you know, pull back in January or February. But if it's not until March or April, then I think it kind of changes the calculus on how you have to do this.
Yeah. All right, very good. If you're joining us midstream, you're welcome to join the conversation. The number is 347-215-8558. If you call, push 1 on your keypad. If you want to be on the show, that'll flag you on our switchboard. You're welcome to talk about tonight's Dynamite and also more broadly the Continental Classic Tournament with all the participants being announced earlier today on YouTube. All right, up next, we'll go to area code 734. I believe that's the Detroit area. Go ahead and state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, guys. John from Michigan. How are you doing this evening?
Hey, John. Good to hear from you. Good to hear from you. Well, what's on your mind about Dynamite and the Continental Classic?
My first time calling. First of all, I want to say love the Torch. Love you and Jake on the .NET Weekly show. I think you both do great work and have good takes on wrestling, and I do enjoy hearing your analysis.
Well, thank you, John. Appreciate it. What prompts you to give us a call tonight as a first-time caller?
Recently, I've been a lapsed AEW fan. I've gotten really tired of the MJF and Adam Cole angle and all those skits with Roderick Strong. Just, it lost me. They've been getting too sports entertaining, and I haven't liked WWE for years, and I was a lapsed wrestling fan until the birth of New Japan in my life back in about 2016. And that revitalized my interest, and that's why I got excited about AEW, because it was going to be an American version of New Japan, or more or less cross with, you know, maybe a Mid-South, early WCW / late TBS NWA show. You know, that was my era, was really the early 80s, and I kind of liked the mixture of that early on, and they kind of got away from it. So on this show, I did enjoy it. So before I get into my criticisms of the tournament, I just wanted to clarify, I thought it was an entertaining show and it kept my interest and I enjoyed it, and I'll be watching next Wednesday. However, I think this is a poor emulation of the G1 / All Japan Triple Crown. Number one, the whole thing is booked backwards. I'm going to go with Gato, what he has done in New Japan. It's clear he books from the finish backwards, and he books upsets. Mm-hmm. So anybody who like maybe only gets one win or maybe two wins, they only get like 4 points, 2 points, they get one big win. Like a few years ago, Hangman Page was in the tournament. Mm-hmm. Didn't do much, but he beat Minoru Suzuki. So he kind of got a little bump from that. So this tournament on night one, no upsets. I don't think that's good. They need a better roster, a better participants. It should be the focus of the promotion. The G1 is the focus of the promotion in the summer months. They announce it ahead of time. The brackets are discussed. I mean, they did a little YouTube show, which I wasn't aware of until today, and I read your report on it, which was very good, Wade. Thank you. However, it should be the focus of promotion, and they're just it's not, and it's just to me they're going to screw it up, and I they have really screwed up Jay White. Jay White was going to be money for him. It was just really plug and play if you establish his background. If you give a little bit of a story, and then you give him clean wins. So what did they do tonight against Roosh? Well, he had to do a low blow before he hit his Blade Runner. And that doesn't move him up. This tournament is a way they could give him a boost after burying him on Saturday. Okay, I've been rambling a lot. I'm going to let you guys comment. I'll sit back and I'll wait. So. Go ahead. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, John, good stuff. I love hearing your perspective, and you sound your timeline similar to Eric Kroll in terms of when you were watching wrestling and what you liked and taking time away from WWE, coming back because of New Japan and then finding promise in AEW and then getting frustrated with AEW lately. I think it's a big part of AEW's fan base that's peeling off from them, you know, a little at a time, but, you know, the trend line isn't great. Jake, what do you want to say to John and in his perspective, including on the tournament tonight, echoing, you know, our thoughts on an upset being nice and relating it to what Gato has done in New Japan with G1, which certainly should be a model that Tony Khan not only is familiar with, but has probably memorized because of Tony Khan's amazing memory.
Yeah, you know, I don't think you necessarily want to completely emulate somebody to the point where it feels like you're sort of stealing their gimmick. But I do think that there's a lot to be learned from how, you know, what makes the G1 successful. And, you know, if you want to go back to, you know, some of the, you know, the early All Japan Triple Crown, you know, crowning that initial champion and that whole thing, you know, you could certainly do that too. And you can borrow from other sports that run successful tournaments and what makes them tick and what makes them fun to watch. But it felt like this was all done very quickly. You know, if they had announced this months ago and, you know, had stories leading into the tournament that made some of these, you know, bracket matchups feel really important, I think we're having a much different conversation here, but we're not. And I think that's part of the issue. It gave them a big main event, or, you know, what will be close to the main event for World's End. But I think, you know, John touched on it. It's, you know, it doesn't feel like we're going on a journey from the first match into the finals. It feels like we're watching a series of exhibition matches that will hopefully culminate in something meaningful by the time we get to the pay-per-view. And that's not what makes, you know, these tournaments feel really fun. You know, go watch how, you know, sports broadcasters and the like, you know, talk about the NCAA tournament or FIFA. You know, they spend weeks, if not months, leading into those tournaments, talking about all the various wrinkles and what, you know, what could potentially happen in the play-in tournaments that lead into it and all those things. And we didn't get that here. And I think that's sort of the unfortunate side effect of kind of flying by the seat of your pants sometimes, is it steals your own thunder by making the things you're doing feel a bit less meaningful than they should. But I'm, you know, that's not to say that I'm not looking forward to some of these matches. I think they're going to be great, you know, but that could be said for a lot of AEW television, and that's not what, you know, it hasn't been a formula that has been working for them recently. You know, you can only throw together so many dream matches on short notice and expect people to show up, because eventually you become the boy who cried wolf with false finishes or interference or, you know, these matches not feeling like they matter. And so that's my primary concern with the tournament, is that, you know, we're going to crown a Triple Crown champion and then things will return to business as usual and it won't feel like we've made any progress. It's the same way that I felt when, you know, when MJF retained the title on Saturday the way he did, and all of the overbooking that was involved in that main event. It's like we went on this incredibly complex and overwrought journey to end up right back where we started, in MJF being sort of in the same position he started in before he started feuding with Jay White. And I think that's a mistake. You know, when you're going to go on a multi-month journey with a character, or in this case, you know, a month-long tournament, you know, everybody who's involved should feel like they have a goal in mind. And, you know, even if they leave disappointed, that can be an inflection point for their character. And I just don't have faith in Tony Khan's discipline as a booker to believe that he has something in mind for everybody in this tournament at this point.
Would you have liked, Jake, and I'll throw this to John too afterwards, qualifying matches for some or all of the wrestlers who made the tournament, or a better explanation or an explanation of how wrestlers were selected, and if Kenny Omega or Hangman Page or Miro on are upset that they're not included when they're, you know, perceived as top level wrestlers who would be really intriguing entrants into this tournament. And how does the way AEW went about it compare to New Japan G1 and how they present it? Jake.
Well, I think it would have been nice to have some play in matches, so to speak, or at least a running tally of people who had qualified over time. If they had known about this tournament for longer than, you know, the few weeks that we had heard about it prior to the pay-per-view, I think they might have had more of a chance to do that. But if you're not going to have the opportunity to do, you know, to have a long runway where you don't have a month or something where you could have these matches and really solidify people's desire to enter this tournament and win this Triple Crown championship and what's at stake, then at least have a lottery or, you know, do the old bingo ball, you know, ball hopper or something where people feel like they're, you know, they've won something just by being able to participate, rather than, you know, having people sort of announced and then people who weren't announced don't feel like they're disappointed or any, you know, there should be something at stake just by getting into this tournament. And we didn't get that. And so I think there's just a lot of missteps around how this was formed and getting it out of the blocks in a way where you feel like this, you know, this thing is electric.
Yeah, storyline-wise, why is Danny Garcia in it, but Wheeler Yuta isn't? Why is Brody King in the tournament, but Nick Jackson isn't, just to grab a name, from someone who's mostly in tag team wrestling? Why is Jay Lethal in it, but not Max Caster or Anthony Bowens? And if the response is, well, or you know, why is Wardlow not in, or Powerhouse Hobbs? And if the answer is, well, they're going to be in a world title program, or they're in a tag team title feud coming up, well, that's the meta explanation. It's inconvenient when you're doing other things with wrestlers outside the tournament to also have them in the tournament. But you should have a storyline structure to explain that without going there, without saying, well, we've disqualified Kenny Omega from it because he and Chris Jericho are going to be going after the tag team titles. You can't really say that, but you could say, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't have a perfect answer to it, but I don't think the way they've done it is enough. I don't think it helps the tournament to say, well, Kenny Omega decided not to enter. He was offered because he's committed to teaming with Jericho, but I would take that over just no explanation at all. There's some thoughts there. John, I'll throw it back to you for your thoughts on that, and you can also add other things if you want.
Yeah, I was sitting here listening to you, and I almost had to get a case of whiplash because I was nodding my head to all the comments Jake was making and what you were saying there, Wade. I mean, basically, doesn't this just describe and epitomize what AEW booking issues have been over the last 9 months, but especially probably last year and a half? There doesn't seem to be any long-term planning. There doesn't seem to be a clear vision. It seems to be booked on the fly. I mean, Tony Khan is overextended, stretched thin, and he's not really doing a good job booking. I think I've heard you mention it before, Wade. He's a matchmaker. He's not a booker. And this tournament requires booking. And right now, that's what my troll with AEW is. He's falling into WWE traps because that's the easy way to do it in America, and all the wrestlers understand it, and it works, but it's not working. The ratings are going down. We used to talk about how is AEW going to get their second million. Well, how is AEW going to get a million again? I mean, for me, college football comes up this weekend, so I'm not going to be watching the 3 hour of Rampage and then Collision on Saturday night. So I'm going to miss all those tournament matches. So if they would have booked this with more of an announcement, more of a, you know, a ramp and a run up to it, I think this thing could have worked really well. But right now, it just seems to be the basic Tony Khan booking issues just epitomized in a tournament.
Jake, you want to add anything to what John just said?
I think that's a good encapsulation of what's going on here.
It's more
of the same in terms of the lack of long-term vision and things being thrown together for the sake of well, this is going to produce some really good matches. And if really good matches were enough to make a successful U.S.-based televised wrestling promotion, I think AEW would have been onto that second million a long time ago, because they, you know, they're a premier company when it comes to putting on very strong wrestling matches. You know, it's the storytelling, it's the characters, it's the larger than life aspect of wrestling, where I think people have been sort of turned off by the product, where, you know, maybe there's too much comedy. Maybe they, you know, if you're like John and you're just not a fan of the sports entertainment aspect of wrestling, you might be turned off by certain aspects of it. But if they were doing enough, you know, then I think they'd be holding on to that audience and they might be looking at growth. But it's a weakening product in a way where, you know, even if you look at the trends in other television, you know, AEW is losing more of an audience than TNT or TBS as a whole. You know, and so it's a serious issue. I don't know that there's a silver bullet answer to it. You know, it's easy to say, well, you know, fix your stories and your characters, but that's a long-term process that takes a long time. And even characters who I thought had really good instincts at one point, you know, particularly MJF, feel like he's lost his way. And so, yeah, there's a lot of work to do here.
John, anything you want to say as a closing topic or any closing words before I move on?
Yeah, so I wanted to bring up, I've written into the fix before, and I mentioned the idea of a double elimination tournament. I thought this would have been a great opportunity to do it. Jake had mentioned how the NCAA tournament is a great ratings draw. But that's a single elimination tournament. I think maybe the College World Series, the softball and the baseball College World Series each summer, is a better example, where you start off with a regional, then you go to a super regional, and then you go to the College World Series, where there's one winner out of eight teams. So you have four matchups in the first round in the 18 tournament. The two winners go to the winner's bracket. The two losers then face each other in an elimination match. That winner then moves on to take on the loser of the winner's match. And that's kind of how the bracket works. It allows you to book upsets, but still then give your Triple Crown Continental Championship to whoever you want, but still be able to give an upset and be able to give Daniel Garcia, or our preferred Kyle Fletcher or Takeshita, you could give them a big upset over a name, and the name, like Moxley, can still win the tournament. I just think it's a missed opportunity. I could keep talking. I'm not going to. love the show, and I just want to pass it on to Jake. You can pass it on to Jason. I think Will Pruitt does the best recap of any show when he does the Collision show each Sunday. Usually it comes out. He has a cutting wit, and he's incredibly insightful. So pass it on to Will. I don't know if you ever talked to him, and pass it on to Jason. Both of you guys are doing a great job. Keep the good work, and have a happy Thanksgiving.
Great, John. Thank you so much. Jake, Will Pruitt. Let's get to the intro here.
I'll definitely pass that along to him.
Now, do you agree, or do you think John's like a little off there in complimenting Will like that?
Well, I'm not going to sit here and put Will over all that. No, he's great. He's fantastic.
Will is great. Well, yeah, he's one of the smarter commentators out there. And as John said, some wit too. All right. Our number 347-215-8558. We're going to play some music for our next guest here.
Hello, Tennessee. We're talking to Sean. Let's go to Tennessee. We're talking to Sean. Talking to Sean. Talking to Sean in Tennessee.
You know, Sean, when you had that song created for you to play, you could have made it a little shorter. No, I'm kidding. That is my Thanksgiving gift to you, Sean. And it's really the gift to all our listeners. Haven't heard that in a while. Good to talk to you. Happy Thanksgiving. Thanks to Mike Myers for that tune. Sean, what's on your mind? How's it going?
It's going well, Wade. I appreciate that. No, happy Thanksgiving to you guys, too. You and Jake are, you know, two of the best. Jake, it's always good to talk to you, man. No, I mean, I don't want to harp on, I hope you let me give my thoughts on the Continental Classic. I don't want to go too long because I don't want to harp on it too much. I know we've talked about it at length, and I don't want to, you know, I don't want to feel like I'm just kind of going over and over what you've kind of talked about. But I just wanted to give my quick thoughts on it as far as the show tonight. I thought was below average, honestly. It was okay. It was just kind of okay for me. I didn't think it was great. James from Clemson, I enjoy his, you know, I enjoy him a lot. He was way higher on it than I was. But, I mean, it was good. The matches were fine. But with the Continental Classic, like you were saying, I think it is a missed opportunity because, Wade, I'm with you. I think they should have loaded it up with a bunch of big-name guys and not have Daniel Garcia. To me, he's been defined down to a lower level where I just don't think he can come back from it, honestly. He could have great matches. But I think he's just such at a low level. They could have had him turn babyface and they didn't, or they did and they went right back and they ruined it. And with, you know, Jay Lethal, he doesn't need to be in this tournament. He just doesn't. I mean, he's just a low level guy. He doesn't need to be in there. And so you just have these matches where I think, like you said, if you put a bunch of big names in there and you have, like, they did a good job of explaining it where, you know, if you lose, if you have an upset, like we were talking about, It doesn't hurt a top-notch guy because if it's a great match, like, he's okay. Like, they can come back from it. Like, it's not the end of the world for them if they lose a big-name match. Like, I think it's going to be okay. I think they can survive it. And so I wanted to hear what you guys – who do you guys think ultimately will win? Because I know you were talking about, you know, bringing up a prediction for it. Like, I mean, I kind of want Swerve to actually win the tournament because I think they have done such a good job, even though the match at Full Gear wasn't for me. I think it did make him a bigger star because of it, but the match is just too gruesome for me. Just the highlights I saw were just too much. I'm like, man, this is too much. But they're on something with him. I think they finally got him on the right track, and I think he needs to win this. But because even Jay White, like John was saying, I think Jay's been really hurt, and the low blow did not help, and the referee acting like I know they pushed the referee, you know, into the ropes, but then, you know, Paul Tarter just sits there for like eight minutes for Jay to give Roosh the low blow. It just felt so orchestrated and so dumb. And then I think Jay's been hurt. And then Moxley, I just don't think – he's just in a weird spot right now. So are you with me? I would have Swerve win this if it were me and make it – but, again, I want to say quickly, yeah, with you on the titles too, I don't like the title aspect of it either. I just think you just need to have – build a guy as a star and have him eventually get to a title run somewhere, you know, AEW title, whatever it is. So are you guys with me on, do you think Swerve should win this, or who would you pick to win it all?
I wrote a Keller's take and posted it right before Dynamite tonight and listed the top candidates to win as Bryan Danielson, Jay White, Swerve Strickland, and Jon Moxley. And then I had Eddie Kingston and Roosh in my second tier, Claudio and Andrade in the third tier, and then long shots being Danny Garcia, Jay Lethal, Brody King, and Mark Briscoe. And I talked about each of them, you know, wrote a paragraph or so on kind of different stories they can tell, win or lose with them. I think Strickland and White have a lot to gain by winning. I don't think Moxley has a ton to gain, but I think he's arguably their top star, the most authentic, least damaged, still in his prime. A lot of check marks next to his name of somebody that you want to protect and not just take for granted. So giving him a chance to win the tournament can kind of create a sense of momentum for his year in 2024, being a little better storyline-wise than it was. And then Bryan Danielson, it sort of feels like his last chance and a tournament almost created for him. So I see a case to be made for all of them. I could imagine Eddie Kingston or Roosh in the finals, depending on the story they tell and if they're committed to Roosh being someone that they want to elevate, you know, and just decide we're gonna turn him into a bigger star. This tournament is a tool to make that happen. Claudio would be like a gold watch type thing. Andrade, you know, I don't think they're going to, but, you know, sort of like Roosh, they're like, okay, we want to do something with him in the next 3 to 4 months. This tournament's going to be a key to ignite that, make him the triple crown champion and have him, you know, maybe challenge for hopefully what's still considered the most prestigious title, the AEW world title. Jake, how about you? What are you thinking? And what do you think about my summary of the top wrestlers there?
Yeah, I don't really see anybody else but Swerve as being the right choice because he's on his way up and you have a chance to make a star. And in the sense that he could be in a position to challenge and potentially dethrone your world champion. And does this tournament and winning it make or break John Moxley? No. Do you want to have Bryan Danielson win this tournament? I mean, you could probably make an argument for it, but it's clear that he's not going to be around full-time for too much longer, and I think he's in a position where he could offer more to the company by giving back and putting somebody over. And he's been very high on Swerve, if you listen to him talk about Swerve, when he's had the opportunity to do so. And you've already basically decided that Jay White isn't that guy right now, you know, just based on how you treated him at the pay-per-view on Saturday. And using a tournament to rehabilitate him, I don't know, does it make a whole lot of sense right now? Is the audience going to be excited to see Jay White go back after the world title immediately after winning a Triple Crown tournament? Probably not. And so yeah. I say it's Swerve, because he's the one who has the most to gain by winning it. He's the least tarnished by the booking over the last couple of months. And he could be a guy in 2024 that you could make a world champion and could be a star. And I mean, you know, whether you're in love with the, you know, the gruesome nature of this match with the, you know, with Hangman Page on Saturday is sort of irrelevant to his long-term star power, because you don't need to do that again if you don't want to.
I ran a poll on PWTorch.com earlier today saying, who do you predict will win the tournament and who do you want to win the tournament? Sort of Strickland ahead in both polls. 26% want him to win. 18% want Danielson to win. 21% want Jay White to win. He's actually ahead of Danielson, but all pretty close. Eddie Kingston and Claudio come in at 11 and 8%. Nobody else above 5%. In the who do you predict will win, Strickland at 35%, Danielson at 31%, Jay White at 19%. So it seems like it's their tournament. In the eyes of fans, John Moxley stuck at 0% for wanting to win early in the voting here, and 4% on who you think will win. So Strickland, White, and Danielson, just, you know, based on small sample size early in this poll, you know, are on people's minds and seen as the most likely to win. And yes, Swerve, the case you made for him, I think, is what people are thinking. It's logical. And I think it's what people want to see. People like to see new stars created or christened, to use the term of the night, or elevated. So some things backing things up there. Sean, back to you.
Yeah. So that's my thing. I think I told you, Wade, I haven't really enjoyed AEW now for a while. And you've talked about all the reasons why, and this isn't going to help their ratings in my opinion either. I mean, the ratings have been down for a while and I don't think this is going to help. I just think, and tonight didn't help again, like you brought up predictability. I just, you know, I was like, I know who's winning these, even though I wanted to have doubt, but I didn't. I knew who was going to win all three. And that, yes, it's fine sometimes, but I think in this kind of a tournament, I think you need to have some kind of doubt and switch it around a little bit. And so I'm curious to see where they go. I mean, I'm interested in it. I think it'll be a fun tournament. But going back to, I just wanted to go to MJF in the Joe segment really fast, because we kind of talked about that. But I have not liked MJF as a babyface at all. I just think he's in a bad spot. And to me, I want Samoa Joe to beat him. I want Joe to beat him. Mm-hmm. I like Joe more than I like MJF right now. I just do. Stuff has helped him at all. I don't think – now, Cole injury, that, you know, wasn't planned, but it is what it is. I just think Joe is a freaking badass, who I want him to kick MJF in the butthole and just beat him. I just, that's what I want right now. I want something different. MJF is a babyface champion. We thought it could work. I don't think it's working. I hope they prove me wrong, but I'm just not liking it at all. I thought the segment was bad on MJF's part. I didn't like any of it at all. I just thought Joe was just owning him on the mic tonight. Am I wrong on that? Does that seem out of place, or you know, do you think it was closer than I'm saying it was?
No, I mean, Jake talked more at length than me earlier about it, but I think we both agree. Joe is authentic. He's badass. He knows who he is. There's no pandering. You know, his body language, his words, his facial expressions, the way he just walks out of the way of people diving at him nonchalantly. He's a type of character, a type of wrestler, a type of person that AEW fans want to cheer. I'm not saying that Tony Khan is going to change the top. Man, if you subtract 8 to 18 years from Joe's age, and he's delivering what he's delivering right now. I think everybody is talking about him as the guy that they should build around. And the question is his, you know, wear and tear, the age, his the mile, you know, the tread left on the style that he's wrestled. Is that enough to disqualify him if he's sort of the unexpected but not shocking favorite star of AEW fans right now? It'd be interesting, speaking of polls, to run a poll, you know, just, you know, based on Joe and MJF and kind of getting a vibe from at least our website readers on that. Jake, anything more you want to add on that?
No, I think that's pretty much where I'm at, too. MJF is he's kind of like a comedian that was exceptionally popular for a short period of time. And, like, he put out a new special starting a couple of months ago, and he's been going on the road with, like, some sort of hacky material that people aren't as enamored with anymore. But, you know, they still like him as a personality, and they have some fond memories of what he was doing before. And so they're still coming to the shows and cheering him, but they just don't have the same love for him anymore. He's got to get back to something that lands a bit more solid than what he's been doing now. It just feels like a lot of hack material to me, which is not something that I would have expected from him, just given how calculated it seemed the first couple of years of his AEW run were. And I don't know what's been driving this, but you know, he feels like he's got to put the company on his back and take big swings, and a lot of it's not working. But I just have not been thrilled with his instincts, and since he's captured the world championship, it's been a bit of a bummer.
Yeah, well put. And I like the comedian analogy, also the stand-up comedian analogy. I'm watching him, Jeff, and I'm like, okay, are we giving him full credit? Is he a step ahead of us? And we just need to kind of have not faith, but well, faith that it's going to all come together and work out in the end. And the missteps are just because of the Cole injury and having to stretch things out a little longer. Or is this someone who's a little bit lost and they're showing it in, you know, being a little, I don't, desperate's not the word, but like reaching, kind of bouncing in different directions, kind of seeing, you know, what sticks. And yeah, I just, My inclination is to say he's a little bit lost and he's trying to find himself again. But I'm always leaving the door open because of the work we've seen with him and how smart he is and what a student of the game he is, that maybe he is a step ahead and this all kind of falls into place in some of the things that we see as not a refined character that knows what it is actually breadcrumbs that's kind of leading us towards a reaction, a payoff and a reaction that he's looking for down the line. So I want to be fair and leave myself open to that. But when I watch him, and it does seem like diminishing crowd responses and, you know, some hack material that doesn't seem like it's intended to be hack material. I don't know.
You've been observing this a lot longer than I have, Wade. I mean, maybe you've seen this before and you could point to some better examples than I can, but you know, for the first couple of years when he was the most successful, he was, you know, a heel that was purposely controversial, you know, saying all the hot button things. And he had the benefit of being able to punch up at much bigger stars. And now maybe it's inexperience with the shoe being on the other foot now that he is the big star and he can't just relentlessly tear down his opponents because he has to, you know, they're challenging him and he has to sell pay-per-views and draw people to television shows on the premise that these people are challenging him. And he's never done it before. So is it just a matter of inexperience and kind of fumbling his way through this process of being a new champion and taking on a new character? I don't know, but it certainly isn't anywhere near as effective as what he was doing, you know, just a year ago.
No, and I mean, one of my theories is he just wants to be the center of attention of the talk of the town every week. And sometimes you just got to go in and cut a good solid promo or have a good match and you know, have an ebb and flow to when you're generating a buzz. And by trying to be that every time he appears on TV and sometimes week after week in a row, you end up with B material or C material that shouldn't make air, things that are counterproductive to what you're doing. But it's his attempt to feed that need to make sure nobody is in the spotlight other than him. But, you know, you get Christian Cage as this template of just this steady, calm, confident, methodical, diabolical, without being over the top. You know, he knows his gig is going, is hitting on Nick Wayne's mom and talking about dead fathers and being domineering and manipulative to people who follow him. And it's like, he knows he doesn't have to reinvent himself. He doesn't have to come across as desperate. He doesn't need to yell. He doesn't need to swear. He doesn't need to get bleeped. He knows what his character is, and he knows that's enough to be entertaining and contribute to the show, and then let the character evolve at the pace of the storyline. And to me, Christian's got it down. And there's some wisdom and calm to what he's doing that I think makes it, you know, more enjoyable than what feels more scattershot and at times, you know, desperate or off track or searching for that lane when it comes to the storylines that MJF has been a part of. And that means MJF's, you know, he's paying a price for that too, in terms of, I think, how people perceive his character. And yeah, you're not, crowds aren't exploding for him. I've seen crowds explode for lead babyface world champions before, and that's not happening with MJF right now. He's not a dead act, but he's not where he was. Sean, back to you.
Yeah, very well said, but I'm with you, Wade. I'm willing to let it play out because it's going to take some time, but yeah, you guys are right on, you know, where you are. Two more quick things I wanted to bring up, and you just talked about Christian. Again, like, I agree with you. I mean, Christian has been phenomenal as a heel. I didn't like this segment tonight, honestly. I want to hear if I'm way off. Christian as a heel has been fine. Him getting on Luchasaurus was fine. That stuff was over the top, but fine for what Christian's been doing. Like, that part was fine. Then the Wayne stuff, and then, again, with his mom coming out, I don't know. And then threatening to hurt his mom. I don't know. I just think it was too much for me. I mean, maybe I'm just overreacting, and I'm just like, it was just so good. Christian just so – he was good in his role, but I just thought it was way too much. And then Edge taking forever to come out. It's like, dude, come on. If you're really going to care about his mom or him or whoever, you're going to come out way before he's almost ready to kill his mom. Like, come on. What do you think? Am I way off base? I didn't really like the segment other than Christian doing his stuff. I liked that part. But other than that, I didn't care for it at all.
No, I think that's a real fair comment. I mean, when you have a non-wrestler who gets knocked into the ropes and then is completely knocked out cold and is lying there for a very long time as Christian is taking out of his control whether Luchasaurus really goes through with it, you can make the case, well, Christian was never going to do it. He just wanted to test Nick Wayne's loyalty to him and scare people. But he didn't know if Luchasaurus would do it or not, but maybe the argument is he knew Luchasaurus wouldn't, and he wanted to use it against him. If you're trying to kind of justify, rationalize, and frame it in a way where she was never truly at risk, it would have to be Christian was, in his mind, was never going to do it, and he also had the utmost confidence that, of course, Luchasaurus was not going to do it either. But, you know, it pushed the limit. And, yeah, Copeland could have come out at least a few seconds earlier. But, you know, it's not like he was sitting around watching the monitor deciding, should I intervene? And they showed him, and it took him forever. We don't know where he was and how, you know, if he was aware of what was going on live. We don't even know why he was at the building tonight. So he just, you know, he was there for the run-in. Jake, what do you think about Christian and what Sean brought up and kind of my trying to generously frame it to take it out of the territory of it was very unrealistic that this mom is going to get concertoed?
Yeah, I thought it made almost everybody in the segment look kind of pathetic in a different way.
Some of that was the goal. I mean, so some of
well,
you
right.
wanted something
no,
like pathetic.
Clearly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just, you know, Luchasaurus looks pathetic because, you know, he clearly disagreed with the name change. He, you know, he kind of made a limp attempt at standing up to Christian when he was going to harm Nick Wayne's mother. And then, you know, he accidentally, you know, knocks her into the ropes as part of the confrontation. And then, you know, the second loyalty test becomes, you know, whether or not he hit her with the concerto. And then you know, the Edge being late. Well, I guess the first thing was, you know, I had disagreements with my mom throughout her life, but I never would have let anyone harm her at any point. You know, like, I don't care how far on the outs you are with your mother. If someone is going to brutally assault her, and you don't step up, you're pathetic. I'm sorry. Like, maybe the idea here was to erase any redeeming qualities to Nick Wayne, but there's nothing left of him now. Like, I have no interest in seeing him on television. You're not even a man anymore.
Oh.
Like, you can't even be bothered to defend your own mother, you know? And so, that
courage.
And then of course, you know, Edge, late as he was, comes out and saves Nick Wayne's mother from this attack, and then decides to subject her to watching her son being brutalized.
Yeah, I noticed there was that. Yep.
Like, what are we even doing with this segment? Like, who is supposed to come out of this looking good? I don't even know what the design was. It was the most frustrating, bizarre segment on the entire show. I came away with it less interested in everybody involved.
Sean, back to you.
No, I mean, Jake, that was a good point. I mean, I thought the same thing at first, but yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, like I said, I mean, Christian was fine in his role. I just said, what does it help anybody in this? I don't know. It's what AEW is getting to this level now, guys, where it's just getting to where, I don't know. It was off the rails. And then, well, leading into going off that, I know the women's match was, you know, second to last, and that's what the spot they're in. But that segment was horrible. Like, the match was not good. The Sky Blue is bland as, I mean, I'm sorry. I don't like her, but she's just, there's nothing there with her. I don't know. And then this Ruby Soho Parker, it's just like, oh my gosh. Saraya just looks awful. She's been such a disappointment since coming to AEW. I had high hopes. I'm out on it right now until they prove me wrong. Ruby Soho has a lot of talent, but she's in this weird spot. Anna Jay didn't need to be in this match. Like, again, on my way off, what was good about that segment? There was nothing good about it to me, other than Sky Blue, they're building the story with her, wherever they're going, and she got the win. But other than that, I just didn't see any point of any of it. What'd you think?
Jake, what'd you think?
Yeah, I don't know what the commitment is to making all of their plucky young baby faces into, like, dour people who have minimal personality. Like, that part kills me. It's like, because you know, at one point Anna Jay was super over in that way, and, you know, or at least not I guess maybe super over is exaggerating, but you know, she was getting over as a baby face, and then they turned her heel, and they did that same thing with Julia Hart, and now they're doing this with Sky Blue. And you know, as you mentioned, you know, the Ruby Soho sort of love story takes up a lot of time here. You know, it's all over the place. I really, another sort of frustrating segment where it doesn't feel like anybody really gained anything other than Sky Blue, who has been handicapped by this very odd character choice that they made for.
Yeah, I didn't come away with strong emotions watching that match. There were a lot of moving parts with the dynamic with Angelo Parker and what's going on with her and him and Ruby, and the Saraya, you know, chewing out Ruby. I mean, there's some moving parts there. Sky Blue doesn't feel just firmly established enough to have in a situation where there's a lot of just mixed signals, so many things going on at once. And so to me, there's just too much going on in the segment. And I think the way to solve the issue of people having an investment and a clear emotional reaction and investment in what's happening is to simplify it. And by simplify, don't have too many things going on at once, because women don't get enough TV time for it to necessarily resonate as needed when you add this, when you have this many moving parts going on in a match. And also simplify the structure of the story that you're telling. So, especially with the women, it's clear who you're supposed to be rooting for, because they're consistent in displaying traits. They don't have to be super pure, but they're consistent in how they present themselves, and opposite of somebody who is either more or less likable, where it just you're getting more of a crowd reaction. Because I think right now the goal of AEW should be get crowd reactions for the women's matches more than telling layered, complex, nuanced stories. Women's matches need crowd heat, and a lot will fall into place if they have that, and they're just not getting that because – again, I think they're adding too many layers and nuance and trying to be all sophisticated and throw curveballs. And I think pro wrestling works when it's simple. It's athletic. If there's stakes, matches have consequences. People are fighting for something. You know how you feel about them, and they're good athletes, and they tell good stories in the ring. That's 97% of the game. The rest is just extra stuff that if it's more than 3%, it can get in the way. Sean, back to you.
No, I mean, yeah, that's the thing. And that's what hurts the women's segments too. They put them on, you know, right before the main event, and it just that's where the crowd, you know, all the on-site correspondents will say, "We're going to the bathroom. We're going to get something deep." They just don't invest in it because they know it's in a spot where nobody's supposed to invest in it because it's in that spot on the show where nobody just is going to care. And so, yeah, and again, to the callers out there that think I'm crazy, you know, again, I don't want to bash AEW. I like AEW. I want them to succeed. Wait, I'm with you all the time when you say get the next million. Like I said, like John said, they're not even going to get to a million with the stuff they're putting on TV right now. They're not going to get there because they just are in their thing of what they do, and this is what they do, and they think this Continental Classic, which I'm excited for in certain ways, that's going to make all these new fans, and I just don't think it's going to because it's got ROH still involved in a lot of ways. You know, they had Wheeler Yuta backstage, who I think, you know, been better with being with BCC, but BCC is undefined. It's always been. And they have him saying, "I want my pure title back." Really? Why do you want your pure title back? It's an ROH title that doesn't really mean anything. So why do you want it back? I get you want a title, but just that one is just like, you know, in my mind, you're like, okay, you know, fine, but it was just whatever. And so, and the last thing I wanted to say, just one more harp. Funny for some people. I just don't want Orange Cassidy. I think one good thing about AEW that I've really enjoyed is Orange Cassidy. I really think they've done a good job with him. I really do in a lot of ways. He's grown on me. I didn't like him at first. I do now. Don't put Danhausen with him. I don't know. I just make Cassidy more – have that serious layer to him, which they're starting to do. I want to keep that. Don't let that go. And so that's pretty much all I had, guys. Like I said, Wade, I appreciate all you do. Jake, the same thing. Happy Thanksgiving, guys. I hope you enjoy time with your families and – we have a lot to be thankful for, and I'm thankful for talking wrestling with you guys. So I appreciate it, and thanks for taking my call.
Great. Thanks, Sean. Appreciate it. Happy Thanksgiving. All right. We have one more jingle on today's show. It's been so long, I don't even know where it is. Here it is. Here we go. Javier, welcome to the post show. Javier Machado, PW Torch contributor. Look for his Survivor Series primer, a full preview with predictions and a recap of feuds up on pwtorch.com before Survivor Series this week. Javier, welcome to the show.
Hey, Wade. Hey, Jake. Thankfully, this was only 5 matches, so happy about that.
Yeah, but like 80 wrestlers, so.
Yeah, but that was fine. They're in groups, so, you know. It's been a while. Last time I tried to get onto one of these post shows, I was actually about to dial in, and I was poisoned because someone gave me what they thought was chocolate was actually hazelnut, and I'm allergic. So,
Oh man,
that was a fun night. But yeah, I should have known better. I should have double checked. But yeah, I basically co-signed everything because I came in late. I co-signed everything that Jake said was when I came in about the tournament. I have the exact same worries that this is going to end up being like the Owen Hart tournaments because who got over on those?
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
So, you know, it's going to be how they follow up on this. The positive stuff, since we've already talked a lot about the negative stuff about the tournament, the positive stuff, though, is the fact that they do have they don't – let me rephrase that. They don't have, like, the tag team wrestler that is obviously there to lose. You know, that you only have like two names and that are the only two possibilities. They have, you know, good wrestlers involved. Although it still, because he was there when they introduced it, it still feels like it's Danielson's tournament, which tells me either he's winning it. I mean, I'm for sure he's winning the B block. And I'm assuming whoever wins the gold block that, it's going to be whoever he really wants to wrestle, which makes me think it's going to be either Strickland, White, or Moxley. So, and I think that he might end up winning it because it takes place on the 30th, and then 4 days later he's wrestling Okada in New Japan Wrestle Kingdom. And since this is supposed to be a title that is going to be defended in all three promotions, I can see Danielson putting it up on the line against Okada.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that. How do you like the – I know it feels rushed, so we kind of stipulate to that. But the selection show today on YouTube, the way wrestlers were selected, but not really an explanation for why – that I've seen for why people were included or excluded, and the way the tournament's set up, just how does it compare to G1? In what ways is it different, and does it matter in the ways that it's different?
Well, I mean, I didn't know how the selections happened because I've been kind of behind the behind the times on the information. One of the things I did see on X was Chris Sansa was kind of complaining about they hadn't, you know, this was a couple of days ago, they hadn't announced the wrestlers yet who were involved in the show until it was like right on top of us. So I really wish they could have spent more time because, the G1 is announced fairly ahead of time, who's going to be involved, and then you get the blocks and stuff like that. They know how to build anticipation over a longer period of time, which I think, this could have used. I think, honestly, because I've been spending way too much time on X lately, but, the feel I get from what people are talking about, the people who are excited about the tournament – they're all talking about the G1. They're like, yeah, we're getting our G1. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're getting our G1. So the excitement comes from people who already know, are expecting something they've already seen. So, but how do you get this excitement on the people who haven't? Particularly when, like I said, you've been burned with previous tournaments where it's like, oh, yeah, let's get excited, but then there's nothing of lasting import after that.
Right. Yeah, the part of what's going to make this tournament matter is not what happens while you're watching it, or what even happens beforehand. It's how do they follow up on it. By the way, James in Clemson, who called earlier, emailed a follow-up, and he said, are you able to recall the first time the G1 debuted? And if so, how did the show compare to that in terms of build, matches, results, and tone? It's tough because the G1 sort of evolved from other tournaments over the decades, going back to like the 1970s. So there wasn't just like a modern era moment that it was born and introduced. But Javier, do you know enough to speak on that or want to give any thoughts to James as far as his question?
Well, to follow more like what you said, because the G1 has evolved. I mean, even from the times I've been watching it, from being two blocks of, and then the amount of wrestlers change. Currently, it's been four blocks. The most recent one, I believe they're doing, they did the same thing that where like number one faces the runner-up of another one, and they basically created like a playoff format after the block part of it. They created a single elimination block, playoff after that. So it's constantly evolved. As a matter of fact, like some people were saying like, I like the fact that this one is, that this tournament's 20-minute time limit as opposed to a 30-minute time limit in the G1. It makes things more exciting. And I'm like, well, you didn't see the G1 this year because the G1 this year had 20-minute time limits so they could get more draws and have less people lose. So it's a thing that's constantly, changing. But, yeah, compared to the first one, that was a while. And you also got to remember that it would have been long enough ago where different sensibility when it came to, how wrestling was what was presented. It was a different, it's like talking about like territory system. So, so that there's also that factor.
What do you think of the field of participants, and what were you expecting? We all have our thoughts on it. And obviously it's not just a total mid-card tournament. Some people have tried to frame it that way. There's certainly some big names in it, but it's a real mix. And again, no real explanation for how people were chosen.
Well, I mean, the biggest problem is that AEW, since they've been trying to protect their wrestlers for a long period of time now, doesn't really feel like they have much strata in terms of like, we basically only know these are the jobbers, these are the protected. We don't have like this guy will beat this guy most of the time, but this guy could beat every now and then. So it doesn't have like, the wrestlers don't feel like I have a sense of scale of where they are in the company. So it's hard to really tell you outside of like, okay, Moxley, and I think that's why people say mid-card is because Moxley and Danielson are really the only two that seem that they're like, usually at the top of the card, while everybody else would be like, I would call it intercontinental level. That's one of the things I'm hoping to see come out of the tournament, and I hope they follow up on, that a wrestler who doesn't win any, a wrestler who basically is in the middle of the pack, and a wrestler who's on the top, we get a better sense of where they sit on the card that way. One of the things they do a lot in the G1 is, they from year to year, but again, this is something that evolves and you have to take, time to plan this out, talking about, this wrestler has been losing, has been coming low and not gaining too many points. So is he even going to be invited the next year? So that's like a kind of story that you can tell using this format. But considering this is the first one, we don't know how it's going to go. We don't know if this is just something that he's doing it to hotshot matches for the month, and then there's not going to be any follow up. So I'm much more interested in if this is going to have any kind of like, who comes out of this with a story. If this becomes like a thing that's like something we look forward to, the G1. So,
David Bryan, who does the Collision Hits and Misses columns for PW Torch, said this tournament is a missed opportunity. I'm going to give it a chance because it'll be good, but it could have been so much more. That feels like the motto of AW lately. It'll be good, but it could have been so much more. Jake, any thoughts on what Javier's had to say so far, and also James's question about just kind of comparing it to G1?
Yeah, I guess I echoed a lot of the same sentiments earlier, so I don't want to repeat myself over and over again. But I think the comparisons to the G1 are inevitable, and I'm sure people who have been watching both for years, have been watching G1 for years and are now watching this will have their critiques as the thing progresses. But I think the issue with AEW right now and its struggle to sort of regain its footing is that good may not be good enough at this point. Is it enough to just give a passable tournament? If you want to regain some of those fans you've lost, or perhaps bring in new people who may not have previously given AEW a chance, you have to execute in a way that brings some electricity to this. And I mean, thus far, it kind of feels like, something that's been pulled out of the oven, before it was fully formed. And so maybe they'll find their groove and things will improve dramatically as the weeks go on. But I hope if this is going to be an annual event that we have a much, much longer lead up to the next one, because I think a lot of the storytelling opportunities that they may have had have sort of already passed them by.
Javier, back to you. Anything else you want to add?
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. This is not going to be like what fixes AEW overnight, because this is just going to be a first step. It's all going to be up on the follow up. And like I said, I mean that is the most important thing. Because I mean, you do have excitement right now from the hardcore fans. So like I said, a lot of people who are familiar with the G1 is, and you have to kind of at least reached that kind of level. For me, it's already like one step behind that, because one of the features for me, probably not for the wrestlers, about the G1 is the actual schedule, where you're basically getting these matches like almost every day. So it is a tighter schedule. So yeah, you're also having that level of exhaustion added to that. And if you're exhausted watching, can you just imagine how exhausted the wrestlers are wrestling it? So that also adds to it, because there's also a level of endurance to it. That's another, you know, I mean, and this is more of a personal, personal thing for me, is that also holds it back, where this is going to be like, just, okay, it's a tournament, it's just in a round robin kind of way. The other cool thing, which is the thing I look forward to a lot in the G1, which we already got here, is the matchup of styles and personalities and wrestlers and people that you might not have thought, I like what I'm seeing here. The three matches, the one I liked the best was Jay White and Rush, because Jay White's someone who sells a lot, and I love his selling, and he's facing up against Rush, who doesn't sell for anybody. So that was a match made in heaven. I liked it, it was not something I was expecting. Jay Lethal and Strickland was another one where I was like, oh, you know, this is cool. Like, you know, old veteran versus this up and comer. And I was curious to see, I was fairly sure that Strickland was going to win, but I was curious to see, like, you know, the younger guy versus the guy who's been around for a long time. So I was really interested in a lot of that stuff. So, at least it has that. So I'm excited in the now, but if you want me to come back next year and be as excited, you got to make me mean something at the end of the day.
Yeah. Yeah, I fear that there's a big group of people who are reinforcing Tony Khan's belief that if you have a championship shiny metal belt that somebody can wear, and you have a bunch of 3.5 to 4.5 star matches, check, you're done. You've given what should work, and anything else, it's someone else's fault or some factor outside of their control, and because they've done their part. And there's more to it. And I mean, that's oversimplifying it, but there is that those voices are out there and they're vocal, going, how can you criticize this? It's going to be exciting. There's going to be great matches. And you know, it's about the buildup. It's about the booking during it. It's about the commentary. It's about the finishes. It's about the crowd heat during the matches and people caring. I mean, you can critique the idea that they opened with Strickland against Lethal. You know, Lethal's part of a clown show. And even Schiavone said, oh, yeah, he doesn't have his goofballs with him this week. And you got Strickland coming off this super hardcore intense angle, these two characters who are coming out of very different universes within AEW, both heels, Jay Lethal, not going for any kind of babyface reaction. He is, flipping off the fans and being, you know, vocalizing as a heel towards them at a time when Strickland is this vile heel after a home invasion. And you open the tournament with that, and then you end up with a crowd not really red hot, not reacting to things. That wouldn't have been my first matchup that I'd present. But, you know, if the idea is, hey, we're going to see novel matchups from people in different worlds crossing paths, and it's going to be more about the points and the competitiveness than it is, crowd heat. I mean, mission accomplished, but even that, I have issues with. But that just goes to, why is Jay Lethal even in the tournament, which you could have explained if you planned this more ahead, and he, you know, I hate to say it, but won a battle royal. At least there'd be some sort of qualification for sort of this wild card spot for somebody who otherwise I just don't think fits, but you can make the case more for Danny Garcia in a win-loss record standpoint, I think, not belonging. But I would have liked the, instead of Tony Khan on his special today talking about, you know, kind of what intrigues him about the wrestlers, I would have liked a little backstory about what prompted them or qualified them to qualify for the tournament, and get into the, you know, if we're going to do a sports-like feel, give a reason. And Tony probably thinks this stuff through as a promoter, but think about it as an on-air authority figure, not a real-life promoter, in the sense of, if this were real, what would Tony Khan, the on-air authority figure, be doing. He'd go, well, I wanted six spots for people who had this on their resume and had done this recently. I wanted three spots for people who are up-and-comers who also didn't have other commitments and their schedule was clear. And then three others are kind of wild card spots. And I really did reward some people, even if their one-loss record wasn't great, for what I think has been their effort lately, or have a fake committee or a real committee put together that you talk about where they discussed it. I think people would love that kind of granular detail about what went into who got selected for the tournament. And instead, we get Tony just, you know, talking up the wrestlers, but not really getting into the format and how people ended up in the spot that they're in. So to me, that's one example. It might not matter to some people, but I'm sure it matters to other people. And you want to do all of that to make this tournament as good as it can be. You know, all the things we're talking about, this was the time for AEW to step up and for people to go, okay, maybe it was a little rushed, but they're doing it right. And then we really won't know, like you said, Javier, until January and February, what the follow-up is and if this just ends up being more like an Owen Hart Cup type thing. And then they'll talk about it again in 10 months. Jake, anything you want to add?
No, I think we covered everything.
Yeah. Javier, anything else you want to bring up?
Well, yeah. Well, and note that when I'm talking about Jay Lethal and Strickland, I'm talking about Jay Lethal's like body of work, not even necessarily what he's done recently. You know, from that mentality of it being more sports like, you know, that's how I came up with, you know, that is the angle I'm approaching it from. Myself now, you know, but yeah, so someone who's not familiar with any of that will have those kind of questions of like, why Jay Lethal, necessarily, but you know, that was my main thing on that. So, and I'm also looking to see what Daniel Garcia can do. That would be my other thing about this, because it seems like they're trying to maybe heat him up again, maybe, hopefully. So,
yeah. Well, if that's not – he shouldn't be in the tournament unless that's their goal. And I would have liked a better explanation for why he made the tournament instead of Kyle Fletcher or Wheeler Yuta or, you know, whoever else you kind of think is sort of comparable to him. Not that there has to be a spot for someone comparable to him. Why isn't Powerhouse Hobbs in it? Or Malachi Black. I mean, it just feels random. And the randomness you can prescribe to, we need some people to give everybody wins so that when we get later in the tournament, the person who's going to lose in one of the final two matches determined who goes to the finals has some points without having to give away Hobbs doing a job or Wardlow doing a job or Malachi Black doing a job. I mean, that's the only explanation that makes sense, but you don't want that to be the only explanation that makes sense.
And with him, you already have a built-in story because with the whole him kind of pushing away from Daddy Magic and other guy.
Yep.
you know, so you know, this is his chance to prove that he's a wrestler, not a sports entertainer, to basically use the storyline that they've been running around with.
It's a great story to tell. They just needed to explain why he's in the tournament to begin with over others, and then I'd be more at peace with it if they could come up with one that made sense. But yeah, if he's in the tournament just to have good matches and lose, but it doesn't advance his character. Ugh.
Yeah.
Javier, anything else you want to bring up?
Talking about the cage thing. I like the cage thing, but you know, the Christian Cage thing, because I don't know. I mean, I view wrestling more or less as a sports, you know, a simulation of a sports, and more a show about a sport. So you know, so I could understand that this is the Christian Cage thing was like way over the top. But he was just so slimy, and he's just like the worst. He's about the one heel that I actually want to see get his ass whooped. You know, so he might be probably the most despicable heel. But I could definitely totally see how, like, you know, people say, oh yeah, this is going over the top, this is way too much. But it almost feels like he's kind of designed for way too much. I enjoyed it, and now with what Wayne did, kind of it got me vibes of Dominic. So maybe they might be heading in that direction, having someone with no redeemable qualities. Yeah. So setting his mom up for that. What else did I have? As far as the devil, I haven't heard my – I'm thinking that it might end up being Kyle O'Reilly might be the one.
Yeah.
Ultimately, it's all around Adam Cole, and I think what solidified it for me today was when, you know, Adam Cole's sitting there in the chair and then the devil appears on the screen with having Adam Cole in the ring with MJF. I think that's what ultimately this ends up going that if Adam Cole himself isn't the devil, it's probably going to be either Roddy or Kyle O'Reilly, you know, someone associated with Cole, and that Cole ultimately is the one behind everything. I think that's ultimately what's going to happen, so I don't expect Jarrett to win because the final chapter here is going to be Cole versus MJF.
Yeah, and it's just a matter of when is Cole genuinely going to be ready to return and how long can they stretch the story out between now and then. And I'm not ruling out that Cole actually will be back sooner than he's indicating on TV, and that's part of what, you know, will be the heel turn is, you know, he tells a story. He's just beginning his physical therapy because he brought that up tonight, but in reality he's ready to go, and it's kind of like Roderick Strong, you know, but minus the comedy.
Exactly, yeah. You brought up Roderick Strong before, able to, at which where Roderick Strong, yeah. Roderick Strong playing it up for comedy, is what for the audience. Since they're doing this with Roderick Strong, I'm not thinking about it over here on the other side.
Yeah.
So the Roderick Strong is taking right, his hand while the other hand is doing something.
Javier, anything else quick you want to bring up? Because I do want to wrap up with everything coming up tomorrow for people.
No, that's about it. I mean, I had some stuff on Osprey, but that could wait for later.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that doesn't feel super, super urgent tonight. Cool. Well, have a great Thanksgiving, Javier. Whatever your plans are, relaxing or stressful, hope it goes well.
Same to you both.
Thanks. Thanks for calling up. I was eager to hear your take on things. So glad you got to join in the conversation here. Yep. Jake, anything else you want to sneak in before we wrap up?
No, ready to go home.
Cool. Sounds good. Thanks to our callers and thanks to our listeners. Everyone have a great weekend and we'll talk to y'all next time. Thank you. Oh, Jake, before we go, just give a little plug for OTOProwrestling.net. I want to sneak that in because if people want to hear more from you, they should know how.
Yeah, sure. You mentioned the .NET Weekly Audio Show already that I do with Jason Powell. This week's edition will be out on Friday. I also do the weekly SmackDown written recap of the show as it airs and an audio review afterwards. And I'll also be joining Jason for the Survivor Series review this coming Saturday. So you can check out all that stuff on the member-exclusive side of things over at ProWrestling.net.
Excellent. All right. Thanks, Jake. And we'll talk to everybody next time.